Welcome back, mighty Vandals, to Tubbs at the Club, the Idaho Vandals affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. And today, Martin's camera is back. He's losing it after I jumped into that voice. But Martin, the people want to know, how are you doing? Because it is great to see your face again.
It's going great. It's good to finally have a camera again so you guys can see my face whenever I do talk, which is still very little. It's also good. I've already had my first Shamrock Shake of the Shamrock Shake season from McDonald's. I am a very happy person, and maybe there might be some special talk later on in the show.
Oh, fuck, Martin. I forgot about the Shamrock Shake. And joining us from Coeur d'Alene, it's none other than Brian Marceau. Brian, you look positively thrilled with this introduction.
Oh, God, I am. I mean, first off, most important thing is, look, I know we're not allowed to talk about this anymore, but Martin, you have a side hustle where, let's just say, a webcam is essential. So, big news in the Heemstra household, hashtag only tubs. But other than that, yeah, dude, we're kind of a weird spot with a couple of stories we're going to hit, you know, just for a minute or two. But I don't know, man, I got to spoil this for everyone. I'm still coming off a little bit of a lull. I have to be the one to ruin the show and bring up the hashtag Mountaineer Minute. It's hard to beat the excitement of the Western Colorado Adam State game from earlier this week. So again, just a weird spot for the show, but I'm ready to get rolling, Dallas. Glad to have everyone back.
So Brian, let's rip that bandaid off and jump into the newsworthy stuff first. We've got a quick volleyball update. Tell us all about it.
I thought we were talking about different news with Martin still on screen. Okay, guys. So, hey, volleyball update. This is real quick. So, hey, interviews concluded last week, and we were told to expect the report to be done and turned into Scott Green. By the way, Scott Green is not the only one who gets a copy of the report as well. Gonzalez is going to get a copy, and the women who filed the complaint with OCRI, they will also get copies too. So the university is not, I would expect the university is not going to be able to keep this completely under wraps the way you'd expect that they'd want to. But we were told that the earliest date for that report to be done is late this week or early next week. I think this has Friday news dump written all over it. So I'm going to be paying attention Friday for if the report finally gets out. But in addition to that, hey, Idaho Volleyball did sign a player. The signee is Madu Fontes. She's an outside hitter from junior college, Florida Southwestern State. You might notice with the name Madu Fontes, that is, let's just say that's another a person of foreign background. There's nothing wrong with foreign players, but we've exhaustively talked on this show about Gonzalez essentially like leaning heavily into foreign players who then feel like they have less options about leaving or not. So whatever, not exactly shocking, but if Gonzalez is not an admin leave, he has to keep being the coach and he needs to sign people. He's going to have some roster spots to replace. So, hey, that's the volleyball news. The main news is to just pay attention to your news feeds come Friday. And if there's nothing Friday, it should be early next week.
As Steve Kurt says in the comment section, 4:59 p.m. on Friday, to be specific. Brian, it came out last week that the report's not going to be publicly released.
Can I pause real quick?
Yes.
You're not wrong, but that was also addressed in Scott Green's email that we talked about back on January 18th, is he said he was not going to release it. However, he does not have control over what the other people do.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to get into is Scott Reed at the Orange County Register put out an article last week saying again the same things that Idaho's not likely to put out the release. Jody Walker specifically said personnel decisions are protected with federal and state personal protections as far as talking about them publicly. University most likely won't be able to disclose the report or the decision because of FERPA protected information and other legal protections, which all makes sense. But like you said, Brian, that just means the university can't do anything. Don't forget, there's a whole bunch of players that have made it pretty clear that they have no problems talking to the media and taking things to Scott Reed at the Orange County Register. So we'll see what actually happens as, again, expect a news dump of whatever the university is going to say publicly Friday or at the beginning of next week. And then maybe things might trickle out from there when other parties are not able to release some of that information. So, but again, Jason Mayer, Friday News Dump. This is absolutely it. FOIA requests are lined up. That's Freedom of Information Act for anybody that's not a part. I don't have any pushback on that. This is exactly what this is going to be. They're going to try to bury this as quietly as they can because it's how it was operated the entire process.
Speaking of another Friday News Dump, which is going to be whenever this is resolved, it'll be another Friday News Dump. This is just a quick story. Not exciting football news, Dallas. This article is published in the Spokesman Review by Alexandra Dugan. I'm sure I butchered that name.
That Vandal, by the way.
Yeah. So this relates to events on February 17th. That's a Saturday. And it comes look, I don't know if other people listen to guys like Colin Cowherd or like Jim Rome in their, you know, in their spare time, but there's a certain phrasing that you can hear about news that tells you only bad news is coming. And that is either late Saturday night or early Sunday morning. And in that vein, late Saturday night, there's a reported large fight at the Beta House, which is Beta Theta Pi fraternity at University of Idaho. There is a party, which, hey, I'm a former fraternity president, man. That's, if there's one thing frats know how to do, man, it's how to, they know how to have a good time. So there was a party and a brawl more or less broke out. And the reason we're talking about it on Tubbs is the athletes have not been, they've not yet been, the names not come out, but there was some football players involved. And this escalated to the point that one, hey, Terry Golic said something about it, which, as we covered in volleyball, like it's got to be pretty big deal to get University of Idaho athletic director to say anything in public about it. A police report was filed. There are very likely charges that are going to be coming potentially to some football players. I say that because at the end of the article, Moscow City attorney, that means prosecutor, Mia Batista declined to comment because the case is also under investigation with their office. That means the prosecutor's office in Moscow, aka Orleta. So we don't know yet who the players are. We do know that Idaho Athletics, because of volleyball, already has a bit of a microscope on it that, you know, spoiler alert, is not a great microscope right now. So it looks like the athletic department needed a dry run with a gigantic story to be able to move quickly on a, you know, pain in the ass story, but not a catastrophe. But all that prologue I just said, we know that Jason Nick has had no problem dismissing players. He cares about championship culture is, you know, the phrasing or the structure that he uses to try to reinforce positive behaviors on the team. And we know Eck is fine letting guys leave the team if they're not going to fit in with the championship culture. So we're going to find out who the players were, but I would in no way be shocked if this helps explain how Idaho has more players with the new signing class and the returners than FCS teams allowed to have. So not saying this is the rationale, but I'd expect we're going to find out a few Vandals are no longer Vandals once the story is resolved.
Yeah, we'll see who's all involved. James Aldridge from the Argonaut in the comment section. MPD and Coach Hughes were talking for about an hour in Einstein's about this last Friday. I was working on homework though, so I heard just about nothing. I'm guessing this is going to be something that's going to be bouncing around the campus for a while because, again, we haven't heard anything about it. But what I find the most interesting, Brian, is, again, shout out to Alexander Duggan for this report, but Director of Athletics Terry Golic said she and the school's football coach Jason Eck are aware of the incident from Saturday that involved members of the football team and that they are currently prioritizing the health, safety, and well-being of their athletes. And Brian, I find that fucking hilarious because that's sure a first. In the wake of what just happened, again, like you said, the trial run here of here's this volleyball scandal that's going to come out and then, hey, we're going to get out in front of the football thing, you know, more than a year and a half later. I know that that's not a word for word thing from Terry Golic. That's, you know, again, the way that reporting works. That's something Golic said, and you can, you know, frame the words around it. It's not a direct quote, prioritizing the health, safety, and well-being of the athletes is just feels like a slap in the face to me at this point, Brian. Like, you see how football is being handled and you see how volleyball is being handled, and it just screams double standard to me, and it's disgusting and it's frankly ridiculous.
Yeah. Only thing I want to pull out of that is just because you brought up Eck and Golic together, I just want to set Eck aside. Eck has done essentially everything by the book since he's been here. Look, the reason I brought up expecting someone's going to be kicked off the team is, hey, we know Eli Cummins was dismissed from the team for not being able to follow along with championship behavior. He worked his way back onto the team, but he had to toe the line for an entire year redshirting. It's like, Eck is serious about, yes, he wants to win games, but he wants to win games the right way. So I just, in what we're talking about, because you and I both have the clear frustration with the volleyball story for sure, and that's part of what you just connected Terry Golic to, I just wanted to directly cleave Jason Eck from that.
Yes, thank you. It's the way that it's written, but yes, there is nothing, at least publicly, that we're aware of that Eck has done incorrectly in handling his program.
And there's no reason to believe there is.
No, exactly. It's more of, again, Golic said she and Eck, which... Yeah, I don't have any disbelief that Eck would not be doing this correctly. I fully believe Eck is handling things the correct way. It's just funny to hear Golic say prioritizing health, safety, and well-being of the athletes. That's not something that feels like is typically what's prioritized. So feels kind of weird. Tom Kendall in the comment section. Seems like when students involved fast action, when coaches you hire get defended and protected. Yeah, that's exactly it. Students did something wrong. Time to throw the book at them. Hey, that coach did something wrong, or maybe did something wrong again. We don't know for sure that. Quiet.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, that's the update for football, which is we'll know more later. But at this point, this isn't just like a flash in the pan. You'll see the story for like 1 second and it goes away. If the prosecutors are involved in this, it's because things are serious. And with that said, we now have much more lighthearted, mostly lighthearted stuff to talk about, Dallas, which is actually had a pretty eventful basketball week.
Yeah, Brian, are we going to start with this chronologically and start with the sadness first? Let's do it. So, Brian, you're our basketball guy. I'll let you give the recap here, but Idaho falls in... they called it on govandals.com, Vandals drop heartbreaker to Weber State, and I feel like that's underselling it just a little bit. 70-69 defeat at ICCU Arena. Tell me about it, Brian.
Okay, and hey, I just want to bookend this, because usually with basketball, we kind of talk about stuff together for collective takeaways, following the follow-up, that heartbreaker loss. And we say heartbreaker. Idaho led the entire damn game against Weber. They were up 60. Idaho led 69-62 with a minute and, 3 seconds left, and found a way to lose. One of the most breathtaking collapses I have ever seen. And look, Idaho had been, this dates back now to that Montana loss, like around Valentine's Day. Idaho has been playing well for in essentially the last 6 games. It's like the team is turned around, but a Weber State win would have made them 3-2 over those last 5. That's a huge development, but hey, the team rebounded, which we're going to have to talk about that, because that's part of the story of this team is sticking together and handling adversity. The Vandals rebounded, beat Idaho State 55-53 in a very tough defensive battle between our, Idaho State in the South. It's the first time Idaho has beat Idaho State since pre-COVID, as we talked about last week. So 2 more games of Idaho looking a lot better than they had during that 8-game run. I think it's safe to say the team that lost 8 games in a row is not the team we're talking about anymore. 6 games is a long time, especially coming off that run. So right now, the Vandals on the season sit at, as I frantically work through my, they sit at 10-16 overall, 4-9 in conference. Now 4-9 in conference puts Idaho at number 9 right now. And hey, for seeding purposes, the bottom 4 teams in the Big Sky are going to play in the opening round games when the Big Sky Conference Tournament kicks off March 9th. Idaho right now, if the tournament began today, would be slotted against number 10, Sacramento State. The winner of this game would play number 1 at the moment, Eastern Washington. The other first round game right now is Idaho, would be Idaho State and Northern Arizona. The winner of that would play right now number 2, Northern Colorado. Idaho sits really not that far though out of getting out of first round bye, which is kind of hard to believe, Dallas, with a team lost 8 in a row. Idaho's got around 5-6 games left on the season. We can actually count that, but the Vandals sit 2 games back from number 6 Montana State with 5 games remaining on the season for Idaho. So with that as the background, initial takeaway, let's kind of err onto the Weber State game first. Weber State is one of, if they're not the second most talented team in the Big Sky, well, they would be the first. I don't think they're the best. I think Eastern is most talented. But hey, Weber State was preseason picked to win the league. They have the league's best win on the season right now with a out-of-conference win over St. Mary's. This is a team that's been pretty damn solid. Dylan Jones is a legit NBA prospect, or role player prospect, but an actual prospect to be drafted, the lone prospect in the Big Sky right now. And Idaho led this game wire to wire. Weber's one of the teams that Idaho in the 8-game run of you know, awful losses was essentially knotted up at halftime, then lost by right around 20. And you can just see, hey, Idaho is putting it together in a different way. 4 guys hit double figures against Weber. Blossom game with 10, Quinn Danker with 13. We'll get more on Danker later. Julius Mims and Kyson Rose combined to go 11 of 11 from the field for 27 points. Hard to get more efficient than that. Christy Mann in the comment section saying, if you're a big white dude playing basketball, chances are your nickname at some point has been Big Country. Kyson Rose was called that at a previous school. Yeah, and man, like, hey, let's talk about Kyson Rose. 5 games in a row now of scoring double figures. He looks like he's just kind of solidified his role. He's getting a lot better touches inside the paint, a lot more touches on the move, a lot more pick and roll touches where, you know, he's not having to post up and back a guy into the basket very much, which is not a relative strength of his. He still hits threes, but he's shooting far fewer threes, which is great news. He's kind of dude who should just be shooting, you know, around 2-ish threes a game. That's closer to where he's at. So we're that post production we talked about last week, scoring around 27 ish, is still hanging pretty steady. But there's Idaho's also getting more, they're getting better production out of the wing. Last week we talked about EJ Neal. EJ Neal did not continue to produce at the same level as he did last week. This week he scored 7 versus Weber, and then Neal put up 3 against Idaho State. That's in starting role. D'Angelo Menis missed both games. But Idaho's getting production from other guys. And look, this is how the wing production is going to have to be for Idaho. There's no all-league talent on the outside for the Vandals. It's going to be piecemeal. It's going to be whoever kind of steps up is who steps up. We don't know who that's going to be in advance. But Idaho's got to get some points from about 3 different wing guys to have a chance. And that's exactly what happened against Weber State before, just face planting that last minute and a half, just destroyed by the press, which Idaho should not have been. That Weber State press that forced back-to-back Idaho turnovers, Dallas, that was Idaho screwing up. That was not like the best press Idaho's ever seen. It was 2 shitty passes. That was it. I don't mean to put down the guys because they rebounded against Idaho State, but truly the team played great for 39 minutes and shit the bed on the way out the door. That's how the team lost that game. But we'll talk more about Idaho State after we bring you back in, Dallas. Before we get to the rebound, because that is what the team did against Idaho State, I guess anything you want to add about the Weber game?
I just want to, you alluded to it there a little bit, but again, Dylan Jones is a guy who will, again, probably be a first round pick, probably in the, you know, the back half of the first round, which means he's going to end up being a role player, which again, not a whole lot of guys get drafted from the Big Sky. So that's still an accomplishment. Idaho out rebounded Weber State. Now, again, it's a team game, obviously, but man, Idaho pushed Weber around a little bit. They out rebounded him by 6. They led for what, 31 minutes, 32 minutes of the game. Like, Idaho, yes, teams have bad nights, but when was the last time we confidently thought Idaho could like take advantage of a team having a bad night? Which, again, until that final minute is what it, what looked like it was going to happen. I thought it was going to be one of the better nights in Vandal basketball history over the last 5 or 6 years. And unfortunately it just didn't come to that. But you look at Brian, how the team shot, they shot 56% from the field, shot better in the second half than they did in the first. I was quite thrilled with how Idaho played realistically until I think the story of the game is that final minute, Brian. There's just nothing you can say about the game without pointing out that final minute was one of the worst final minutes of basketball I've ever seen. You're muted, Brian.
Good God. Okay. So, yeah, that it's hard to stress how rough that collapse was. Back to Weber State scored on 4 consecutive possessions while Idaho had multiple turnovers and a couple just really shitty shot attempts like that. There's no way around it. Quinn Danker struggled both the games. Now Danker is playing point guard right now, and that's not his natural positioning. He typically plays off ball. I really think that Danker this is a catch 22 for Idaho. I honestly think Idaho's better with Minnis not starting, but Danker is clearly not he is not effortlessly comfortable as a distributor. So I feel like he pressed a ton the last 2 games, shot 8 of 27, and just not what Danker would call his best night. Well, he also took a couple bad shots late in the game. Jason Mayer said bad, no charge call. That was a 50-52. See, Jason, I'm not convinced that was a bad call. I thought the dude's heels looked pretty dang. I thought EJ Neal's heels looked like they were very close to the line. Not 100% sure they were, but I'm in the pro. I want fewer and fewer charges called in college basketball because I was sick of people being able to just hurdle their bodies in front of athletes and have that count as good defense. But to push back a little bit, even if that was a rough call, well, I mean, that call didn't make Idaho throw 2 incredibly just shitty back-to-back passes against a press and surrender 3 consecutive scores after the blocking foul. So like, hey, look, if you're a 50-50 call, half people are going to be pissed, half people are not. The rest is what matters to me. James Aldrich, no team should stop playing at 69 points after high school. I can't really push back. Eric Stang, he had legal guarding position and that's all he needs to do. Okay, Eric, like I don't disagree, but a block and a charge is, as Jason Mayer did reference, that's a call that's judgment call late in the game. The other possessions are what I care about. Look, big sky refs. This is something I see on Twitter all the time, not just from Vandals, from Montana fans a ton, but just keep in mind, this is what I grew up being told. I played basketball as a kid all through high school. And I went to games, both college, a lot of junior college, a lot of D1 too. I was told forever that the caliber of refs is going to be equal to the caliber of the players. So if you watch a team like Idaho against a press throw 2 catastrophically terrible passes to turn the ball over, you got to keep in mind, hey, the refs are going to have their own brain farts here too. So with that being said, that call didn't make Idaho have the following 3 possessions. And all Idaho had to do was not have one of those 3 possessions turn out poorly for the game to be on ice. But what I want to talk a little bit more about is, hey, we'll get to the Idaho State game, which was very different. Both teams shot sub 40%. That was a very gritty win for Idaho because Ryan Looney's team at Idaho State, look, they're not going to win the Big Sky by any means. And I hate the offense that Idaho State runs, but they stick to their game plan. They do what they're supposed to. And they do play a lot of teams very tough. So Idaho State is by no means an easy out. And Idaho had every reason to not come out hot after that, the way that loss happened to Weber State. And the fact of the team coming together the way they have, not only against Idaho State, but I mean, truly think of how bad morale must have felt as the team was cranking out blowout losses in that 8-game losing streak, staying close for half and getting killed. And this is where I want to bring up Alex Pribble, guys, is Idaho's at 10-16. They won 10 games last year with Zach Kloss. So the next win will put Idaho over last year's 10-win threshold. But the bigger deal is, look, we talked for the last 5 years about when Idaho would hit these dangerous patches in the season, how if you don't turn these moral victories into W's, like that season cascades, just goes to hell. Pribble's team ran the gauntlet and they've clearly come together. Not only after the 8 losses, but after that come apart against Weber State. They came to play against Idaho State, picked up the win. And I just want to say, I think this team clearly believes in itself. I think Alex Pribble is clearly a good coach, clearly an upgrade over what we had before, but I don't care about that because that's not a very hard thing to say. I feel confident about Alex Pribble as a Big Sky coach. I like what the team's doing defensively, but more important, the way he's been able to keep the team together after that awful run of eight losses and then that faceplant against Weber, that makes me feel good about this Idaho team. It makes me feel, look, I wouldn't gamble on it, but Idaho sneaking out of that first round is not yet off the table, guys. They need a couple things to go their way, but this is a team the last six games that I said Idaho State's been a tough out. Well, the last six games, University of Idaho's been pretty tough to handle. I mean, going dating to February 1st, so that was the Montana game. 3-point loss against Montana, 6-point win over Montana State, 16-point win over Sac, an 8-point loss to Eastern that was competitive until the last minute and a half, 1-point loss Weber, then a 2-point win at Idaho State. That sounds like a 500-ish team just based off that run of games of being competitive, not winning them all, winning half, losing half. But and if you look at Big Sky standings, man, if Idaho can be a 500 level team, well, the middle, the number six Montana State Bobcats are 6-7 right now. That's the spot Idaho needs to get to. So yeah, Vandals are going to need some help with Montana State, but if Idaho starts picking up wins like they've been doing, it is absolutely not out of the question, Dallas, that this team's at, even if they don't make it out of the first round, that they're competing to get out of the first round. And we're still at the point where this moral victories matter for this team because they're not going to win. Again, we know they're not going to win the conference title. We know they're not going to win the Big Sky Conference tournament. That's how this team is going to be. Moral victories do matter for a first-year coach. And beating that total of 10 wins, we know that's going to happen, matters. Getting a win over Idaho State for the first time since COVID matters. That monkey's off the Vandal back. The next is either getting a first round bye in the tournament or picking up that first Big Sky Conference tournament win since the tournament's been in Boise. If Pribble can knock all of those things off, all those monkeys off Idaho's back in year one, I got to say, man, I don't know what else anyone would be hoping for based off of what Pribble began from.
So it sounds like Brian is alluding to Idaho being on the right track. You know what will get you on the right track? Taking a great all-inclusive week-long vacation in your backyard. Hughes River Expeditions has been Vandal owned and operated since 1976, and they're ready to take you, yes, you, on the vacation of a lifetime. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, the Salmon River Canyons, or even the Selway. You could check out special trips like one to see the Perseid Meteor Shower, camp on pristine beaches, run amazing whitewater, hike scenic trails, spot wildlife, soak in beautiful natural hot springs, and guys, like I'm always emphasizing, fish some of the most remote stretches of river in the entire USA. Just bring your clothes, let HRE handle the rest. Grab a paddle, catch dinner, and ride the bull all throughout the Gem State. Call them now at 406-540-4450. Again, that's 406-540-4450, or check them out at HughesRiver.com. So, Brian, what I feel like we haven't emphasized enough here. Zach Kloss's best winning record at Idaho, 10 wins, 21 losses. Alex Pribble, currently 10 wins, 16 losses. We've got 5 games left to have the best year that the Vandals have had since Don Verlin's second to last season in charge. Feel like we should have just emphasized that. Feel like we should have led the show with that. Alex Pribble ties Zach Kloss for best Vandals basketball season. Like, I feel like we should be shouting that from the rooftops, that all it took was bringing one new guy in and, hey, look, the program might actually be getting a little bit better instead of what it was the last 4 years. But Brian, you hit it on the head. Like, this is a team that you feel like there's things growing here, and it hasn't felt like that for a while. As Eric Sting says in the comment section, he manages his talent well, talking about Coach Pribble. Defensively, they're getting better. they can take care of the ball a little better on offense and shoot a little better, could be a scary team heading into postseason. Like that's the whole thing, I think, in year one of Coach Pribble, to say this is a successful season, or it can maybe not success, maybe is not the right word, but a good building block for what the program could turn into. This is not a team that's a pushover like has happened most of the last few years down in Boise. And that's growth. And that's something we haven't seen a whole lot of. James Aldridge in the comment section, going back on the incoming 11th win, it's a bit of a milestone just because I think it's an external marker that we're moving this team in the right direction. Quote from Coach Pribble. Brian, very visceral reaction to that. I'll let you speak.
Oh, no, just the reaction that viewers saw, listeners did not, was that, look, I shouldn't have said anything. It's more that Pribble said the word direction after right and not track after right. And I really would just love if Pribble was in on the right track joke, which he is not. But no, like, hey, that's right. Is this team, it's been half a decade, which is a very, it's a long time, guys, for the basketball that we've been looking through. And I want to look at the next five games just for a second, because hey, Idaho's coming together at the right time late in the year. If you want, this is when you want to be playing your best basketball. This is when Idaho's playing its best basketball. I have no problem saying that unequivocally, because the Big Sky conference schedule itself is much more difficult than the majority of Idaho's out of conference schedule. The final five games Idaho's looking at is this week. It's the Northerns. We have Northern number two in conference, Northern Colorado. Then Idaho has number eight in conference, Northern Arizona. Northern Arizona sits at 5-8. Idaho sits at 4-9. So for sure, at least one winnable game this coming week. I don't care that it's on the road. Northern Arizona is not a good basketball team. Idaho, the loss earlier in the year to Northern Arizona was like the lowest point of the season for me. And I think Idaho is going to be looking for blood. I think this team clearly believes in themselves in a way they, I don't think they did collectively in that 8-game losing streak. And if Idaho's going to be, if we're going to care about Idaho's pole position for the postseason, Idaho's got to pick up a W, at least one W. Northern Colorado's different. Look, Northern Colorado's more talented than Idaho. The end. Like there isn't much pushback there. St. Thomas, if he's not the best player in the conference, he's the second best player. Dylan Jones is really the only guy in competition to being better than Ford for Northern Colorado, St. Thomas. So I don't expect to win over Northern Colorado, but it's important for Idaho to go 1-1 in the games this week on the road. And then the final homestand, wild to think about this, Dallas, that in 2 weeks, it's the final home basketball games. Cause we're just getting around to talking about basketball with regularity. Is hosting Montana State and Montana State Thursday, Montana Saturday, for February 29th, March 2nd. And look, Montana State is one of the teams that Idaho has to pick up, make some ground up on. And Idaho can do themselves a favor with a win over Montana State. Huge. Those two games are huge. But then we have another team that Idaho is trying to move ahead of to close the season out. Top five Portland State is, tell me if you've heard this before, Dallas, not quite top. Okay, damn it, they're number five in conference, so there it works. But Portland State,
that's perfect, thank you.
Yeah, Portland State is sitting at 7-7. So top five Portland State and number six Montana State are two teams that it's not unreasonable for Idaho to try to press for one of those first round buys. Picking up wins over both those teams, absolutely essential. But with how Idaho's played the last six games, like the moral victory, because I in football, because the team's good, we don't talk about moral victories, but this basketball team is not there. And you have to be reasonable about what you're expecting out of these teams. Winning three of the final five is not off the table for Idaho. With NAU not being very good. And if Idaho is going to be, if the team we've seen the last six games is who they are, Idaho is rising while Montana State is starting to fall, and ditto that with Portland State. So I'm just more floored that this far out now, this is the first time, Dallas, you and I have ever, while we've been on Tubbs the Club, and I this is not hyperbole, this is the first time we have ever sat down, worked through the men's basketball schedule to say, hey, if we're going to have a bye, this is what it's got to look like.
We have never Brian, that hasn't even been something we have talked about in preparation for a show, because it was so far off the table that it was never going to happen. And here we are talking to each other on live podcast or whatever the hell you call this. I mean, you look at you mentioned it, Portland State and NAU, not outstanding. If you can steal one of those two on the road, again, you'd love to beat Montana State and Montana both at home, get the win on, again, senior night to finish off the Grizz there. Man, three wins, and you might be able to sneak in to the next round and not play in the first round and get a loss like every other year. Like this is foreign to me at this point, because all we know is, again, the Zach Kloss basketball, which was, hey, let's go get our ass kicked in the first round in Boise every single year. It's just, man, I really hope that like a guy like Christian Gonzalez has been playing a little bit more recently, ended up a career high of 11 points against the Bengals, which, again, was a super weird game. Hopefully you see these guys that are getting a little bit more opportunity here at the end in the wake of some of these injuries. Hopefully this continues and Idaho can make something of it. I still have a little bit of PTSD, and I'm still afraid that, like, we're going to be talking the next couple weeks about, oh yeah, hey, Idaho went back to getting their asses kicked. I'm afraid this team hasn't turned the corner, and that's not anything against this team or Alex Pribble. It's the PTSD of, man, come March, usually this team is looking pretty rough and they're ripe to just get punched in the face in the first round. And it's very weird to be, hey, we're coming on a little bit stronger at the end of the year, pick up a couple wins here and there. Again, we're talking about Idaho finishing with a winning record over the last couple weeks of the season, which, again, I don't know that we've ever seen that here.
Yeah, I think I might have to backtrack of one thing I said earlier about D'Angelo Minnis not playing, because Minnis didn't play this weekend or this week against Weber and Idaho State, but in the previous four. So he played in four out of the six games where this is kind of these last six games, kind of the after part of Idaho season, where we had the marker of before was an 8-game losing streak. The now is the team coming together final six. Minnis in four of the six games had played some of his better basketball, scoring double figures three of the last four he played in. So I should probably walk back. A more fair way to put it is, I do think Idaho looks a little bit better as a rebounding team and a little bit better defensively without Minnis. The issue being, with the intermittent wing production, Minnis's shooting is probably something Idaho needs if they're gonna score a few more points. The Idaho State winning that 55-53, like, hey, that was a really gritty game for Idaho. Idaho State's a very tough physical team, and Idaho went toe-to-toe and came out with W. So, like, hey, credit to the Vandals for that. But scoring 55 points is only going to have any prayer of getting you a W against Sacramento State and Idaho State. There's essentially no other team that's going to be enough. And Minnis does provide some scoring punch that maybe I was a bit premature writing off. I guess what I do like is I hope EJ Neal stays in that starting lineup. Because having him at the three, the extra size, he only averaged five in the last two games, but I like that he's aggressive. He gets to the rim better than most of the wings on the Vandal roster. So maybe Minnis getting back also lets Quinn Danker mellow out a little bit. Cause like I want to be fair to Quinn Danker. Sometimes he's the only guy who looks like he can kind of create shot attempts late in the shot clock. And teams need those guys. And the players who do that, very often they're taking tough shots against the shot clock. So that's part of why his shooting numbers are what they are. But I also just think there's times where Danker thinks he needs to win the game, and that's not who he is. I think he needs to let the offense come to him where he can be a solid contributing piece. The fact of being a leading scorer on this Vandal team isn't any sort of, I don't think anyone should give a shit about that. This team doesn't have an all-star. This team does not have if I were voting, the only guy I'd even think about voting for an all Big Sky team that's on the Vandals is Julius Mims. No one else I would get one moment of thought, which is to say, this team is going to win because three or four guys step up and have solid nights. And the composition of who those three or four guys are going to be is going to rotate, because what's mostly going to dictate it is the looks that the team is able to generate. So, like, hey, we saw better play out of EJ Neal for those couple games, but then we've seen very steady play by Kyson Rose. We've also seen a little bit better play recently from Trey Blossom game. So whoever is able to step up for Idaho, and truly, like, this is kind of an up and down thing. It's just going to have to be three or four guys each game contributing a little bit more than they do on average. James Aldridge saying, making reference in the comment section saying, my computer's freaking out right now. Talking about D'Angelo Mennis being one of the better guys for lobs to Julius Mims. Okay, here's the pushback I have. I'm not, like, I don't disagree with that, but teams are starting to not be that worried about the penetrator in pick and rolls with Idaho and Julius Mims, because they know the target is a lob to Mims. The benefit of D'Angelo Mennis is he is a willing and can be solid 3-point shooter. So if he can punish guys for coming underneath, that can matter. But I just don't think the lobs are going to come as easily for Mims unless the team can get into transition.
Brian, I want to bring up Eric Stang thinks they'll beat Montana and Montana State. Says they're going to get a road split this week, but then take an L versus Portland State. Portland State, the scariest team in the Big Sky. Eric, I'd love to get
five.
That's more than enough reasoning for me. But Eric, I'd love to get your reasoning in the comment section. Brian, your thoughts on Portland State being the scariest team in the Big Sky, other than being top five?
No. I mean, to me, Portland State's not Portland State early in the year looked like they were going to be more than they are. But, you know, the Portland State Vikings sit at 7-7 in conference. They're 16-11 on the season, but they're kind of, they've been very hot, cold, as in, like, they had a pretty good out of conference run. Then they took a few L's. They lost by 19. To Northern Arizona, lost by 29 to Northern Colorado. Since then, the team has certainly rebounded, but they're incredibly up or down. So, like, let's look at their last six games, you know, compared to Idaho's last six games, just as a reference point. Portland State had beat Sacramento State narrowly, then lost back-to-back-to-back to Eastern Weber, then Idaho State, then picked up back-to-back wins over Northern Colorado, then Northern Arizona. So, hey, they avenged that early season loss. But they're very up or down, and let's just say the down version of Portland State I don't find scary whatsoever. And honestly, Idaho should have beat Portland State earlier this season when Idaho was not playing its best basketball. So that would be why they do not scare me. But that's I'm also going to be like, hey, fair show. In the entire Big Sky, like, media world, I have a clear bias against Portland State. So, like, any chance I can take the negative interpretation of the Vikings, I'm going to take it. So Eric might be a bit more on saying, hey, hot and cold team, what you're scared about is that they show up hot. I guess my reaction is early in the season, Portland State looked like they were something more than they are.
So what you're saying is you're not feeling the Coburn. For anybody that doesn't know, the head coach at Portland State is Jace Coburn. Sorry, very stupid joke, Brian. Brian, I don't have a whole lot else of basketball talk. Again, I feel like the one thing that was kind of missed I wanted to mention was I brought up Christian Gonzalez. Thought he played really well at the end of that Idaho State game. He scored 7 of the final 12 points. I think Mims had most of the rest of them. Nice to see, again, one of the younger guys stepping up.
That's a really good point. Because Christian Gonzalez had a long run of not looking that great or not playing that much for Idaho after looking kind of promising earlier in the season. So he scored 11 against Idaho State. That tied a season high. His previous season high came against Portland State on December 30th. So he had about 8-9 games of not doing much at all. And by the end of the Idaho State game, as you brought up, Idaho was running its offense through Christian Gonzalez, which that's a huge development for Christian Gonzalez. The thing on the floor he did that I liked a lot more this game is he's had a tendency to be a ball stopper, as in he gets the ball and he starts moving sideways, but doesn't actually go anywhere. Doesn't put actual pressure on the defense. Clearly the coaches have been working with him on not doing that, because he was much better against Idaho State at just making a hard move and going. And that was how he was able to penetrate. And you could see in that Idaho State game, the promise that we thought we saw earlier in the season with Gonzalez, you can understand with how he handled. Idaho State's one of the better defensive teams in the conference. You could see the comfort as a ball handler, the comfort off the dribble, and he's a willing passer. So not only was he scoring, but also it wasn't forcing up shots. He took them when they weren't there, and he found open guys when they were not, when he was not. So 100% you're right. To me, that was easily the best game we've seen out of Christian Gonzalez so far.
Yeah, unfortunately, one of the things that the stat box just doesn't reflect, I did think he did a pretty good job distributing the ball. No direct assists he was responsible for, but Idaho only had 13 in the game against Weber State, and then only 9 against Idaho State. But again, their defensive structure is a little bit harder to accumulate those kind of numbers. So any final thoughts, Brian, before we call it a night?
Well, first, for sure, guys, hey, support the show, patreon.com/tubsoftheclub. So it costs less than a cup of coffee. You can always pay more. And we love our patrons who pay more than a cup of coffee. But hey, we have the only Tubbs Discord is single best online chat that exists. It explodes during football season, but it's still pretty damn solid throughout the year. So support the show. And also, look, hey, get comfortable with some of the people you might start meeting at the tailgate itself during football season. So, hey, patreon.com/tubsoftheclub. Christy Mayer saying, any insight on year out getting zero playing time last several games? Seems like he'd see at least a few minutes off the bench with all the injuries we've got. So, I guess, hey, Christy, that's the point I would bring up here. Because Titus year out from Lapway, you know, he's a local dude. A lot of people, everyone likes when a local guy makes a team and contributes. Like there's no loser in that story. I think Titus Yearout has not shown what type of D1 guard he can be. And when I say that is he's on the smaller side. He has not yet shown the confidence as a primary ball handler that like Christian Gonzalez showed against Idaho State. He's had moments where as a shooting guard, a guy playing off ball, where he can be a strong penetrator and get good looks. He just hasn't been throughout the year. His issue is getting good looks that he just doesn't finish. And reason I bring that up is Idaho's in a ton of tight games right now. And I just don't, my guess is Pribble right now is saying, look, if Idaho's going to be in these tight games, he needs to play guys who he knows what their role is. And I don't think it's 100% clear yet what role Titus Yearout can play as a D1 contributor. We've certainly seen moments where he can create his shot in a way that this team needs guys who can create their own shot, but he hasn't been able to finish. And we have all these tight games. You can understand Pribble saying, hey, we don't know what we're getting offensively out of him, Christy, we're going to err on the side of playing bigger guys, or we're going to physically bigger guys. Like, hey, Trayvon Blasingame, physically bigger than Titus Yearout. EJ Neal, physically bigger than Titus Yearout. Quinn Danker, physically bigger than Titus Yearout. Or, like when Minnis is back, guys who we know what offensively he brings to the table.
And just to throw in, Patty Frakes, next year when Minnis has graduated, his role hopefully will increase. James Aldridge, if Yearout was a bit bigger and a bit taller, he might be getting the minutes hard he's gotten. And again, it is just that unfortunately, sometimes you just can't teach size. And if the guy doesn't have a carved out role, it's kind of hard to break into that rotation when A, you don't have your role defined, and B, all the other guys are bigger than you. It just is what it is. One last thing I want to hit in the comment section. Eric Stang saying, PSU spreads their minutes out a little too much, but when they roll with the better lineups, they're pretty tough to guard at all five spots. So as somebody who has not watched enough of Portland State basketball, I appreciated the two of you talking about either sides of the burn we were feeling. And speaking of burn, hashtag only tubs. Like Brian said, less than a cup of coffee a month, guys.
So we're closing in on, I think we're about to be done, man. So I guess, hey, to hit a couple points. One, hey, Patty and Martin recorded their they record an episode covering the women's team. So, hey, if you're wondering where that coverage is, that's where it is. I don't know how to give a better answer to this, guys. I don't think it's a secret. Everyone knows we all work full time. We all have other commitments too. Like, hey, I've got a family, commute, and medical stuff I take care of. We just run out of minutes to cover everything on the show and be experts on what we're talking about. Like, I'm not going to talk about the women's team if I don't know shit about them. So that's probably how we're going to get the women's team covered. But hey, we given time and attention there too, just, you know, some things have to fit where they fit. But hey, the women's team and the other thing too is just, look, I grew up watching men's basketball, so that's what I default to. They play games at the same time. I really wish there was a way to schedule more like double headers, especially on Saturdays, but whatever. That's not where we're at. To hit back to the point I was actually going to bring up, whenever we get a hold of a copy of that volleyball report, and hey, if we got volleyball players listening who have a copy of the report, we know some people who would love to talk about that. When the report comes out or when we have news to talk about that, we will obviously be giving a lot of time and attention to the volleyball report as it comes out. So that's kind of hey, just keep your eyes open for the bat signal of whether that's something we talk about during the week or if we schedule it differently. But as we have news to talk about with volleyball and then with resolving the football inconvenience, you might say, we'll cover it. But at this point, everyone's on the same page of there's no real new volleyball news until the report's out and something happens. So we're all in wait and see mode. Same thing with football. Until we have names, realistically with the names coming out, it looks like part of that's going to be when charges are filed. We'll cover it when we have it. But other than that, man, it's basketball season for just a teeny bit longer before we get back into spring football. Kind of weird to see how this evolved. Mark Triple P's comment section saying, I know I'm late to the party, but Idaho 4-0 versus ISU last weekend between basketball and hockey. Where are you at, jungle? Crickets. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for bringing up the hockey W too, because that was big. Yeah, really big, really great week for Idaho to beat the shit out of Idaho State. Because now if you cycled up, if you count in football, that's a lot of Bengal losses this last year to Idaho. King Spud is still living in Pocatello because the King Spud trophy is done off a combination of record then point margin is the tiebreak, and Idaho lost the point margin. But I don't know, man, things are turning around. We're closing in on a point where we get to just talk about like the good stories, because realistically we probably have like one or two volleyball episodes to talk about heading into the future before that story is kind of resolved in, you know, the way it is right now. And then it's kind of back to normal, back to smooth sailing, which I'm okay with.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully that resolution is Chris Gonzalez, not Christian Gonzalez. I like Christian Gonzalez. He can stay. Hopefully it means Chris Gonzalez gets the fuck out of this university, but we'll see what happens. So that, I think that will also change how, again, that story might not die if he's still around for one final season. But one last thing I want to hit here. Tom Kendall, hey, see some of you at the VSF Gala on Friday night. I will be one of the guys with I Love Volleyball swag. If you go to the VSF Gala, please make sure to find Tom. Give him a good handshake for us. Love that guy. Thanks, Tom.
Well, before we call it a night, Martin, we didn't talk about this, but we got to pull you in. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You did it. You did it. Come on. Come on. Martin, you were the eyes and ears for Trip V Class Volume 2. So give us.
So I'm not going to have this because I just want to speak without this. It was, I spent the final day of my 20-year-old days, like watching as I put in a Twitter DM thread to Dallas and Brian that said, what the fuck is wrong with my life? I'm watching two shit D2 teams play on a Friday night. I watched the entire game. It was about what you expected. It was I want to say the worst game ever, but it was like, I watched all 40 minutes. I watched everything. It was what you would expect from a Claws game. Like, if you wanted to watch Claws basketball again, and wanted to, this was quintessential everything. It had everything you would have wanted.
Wide open threes.
Wide open threes getting bricked. Long twos getting bricked. It had everything. It was like, it was a close back and forth. Like Adam State pulled up by five.
Why in God's name did you watch all 40 minutes, man?
Because like, it was a joke in our bit.
It was a joke in our Discord. That like,
I was committed to the bit.
No, like in our like in the Discord, we made a huge for a long time. We all talked about like, hey, the Super Bowl is coming, guys. Of Colossus Trip Volume 2. I didn't think anyone was going to actually watch it. Then Martin commits his Friday night to not just watching the game, but giving Discord updates and our own private updates.
Shout out to Duffer's Tavern. We said Zach Kloss. That's a bad word. Shots are now 50% off. Only Duffer's Tavern.
50 cents off. That is quite the bargain. 50% off. Duffers, you can let us know if that is truly 50% off because we need to know who your patrons are so we can decide how often to bring up this 50% discount.
He said it again. So that's, I mean, we're on the way. It's 50 cents, but we're on the way to 50% if you guys keep bringing him up. I guess I was the first one to bring him up because, hey, we're on 11 win watch here. With that said, guys, we're at an hour.
Jesus Christ.
With that being said, we have lost the right track at least 10 minutes ago. Thank you all for sticking around as we plowed into Golden Veggies season fucking 14 or whatever we're on at this point. And yes, Tom, there was a locker room victory photo. Martin, I'm sure you can pull that up for us while we exit the show.
Because Martin doesn't have it saved.
Because it's right there. So I'm going to take all three of us off the screen real quick. Horrifying. Just absolutely horrifying, gentlemen. All right. With that said,
Steve Kurtz is telling us to shut up and just end the show. Thank you, Steve.
Go Vandals.
Go Vandals.
Go Vandals.
Go Vandals. Go Vandals.
This is producer Brian doing a terrible job of even finding what we're going to play us out with. So we're just going to call it good. See you guys Tuesday.